off your shells, because it's Mardi Gras, even though canonically last week it was July. But that doesn't matter, because cartoons. Welcome to Deuteronomy. I'm Brian.
I'm Dan.
And this week we watch Season 3, Episode 16, The Four Musketeers.
This is written by Doug Molitor. I'm sorry if I pronounced that name wrong.
Yeah, that's a new one on the roster, to my knowledge.
Yeah.
Originally broadcast in October 16th of 1989. We have another note. Greg Berg is pinch hitting with Donatello again. He does a pretty good job. You know what? In the realm of all the pinch hitters, Greg Berg is up there for me.
Yeah, I think it was one of those things where, like, the first time I heard it, it threw me off. And this time I definitely noticed it again, but it was easier to I was used to it now.
He does a good job. He can be a clone. Props.
Yeah. Also, just throwing this in here, Doug Molitor wrote 23 episodes of Captain Planet and the Planeteers.
That explains a lot, actually. We have another Leonardo-centric episode on us here, Dan. How do you feel about that? That's two in a row.
I mean, I like it. I think Cam Clark had a ton of fun.
Yeah, Cam Clark is definitely a highlight in, well, let's say not the most stellar episode in the roster. If you couldn't tell already, this one is centered around an adaptation of The Three Musketeers, a classic French novelization. Dan, what's your favorite musketeer?
Chris O'Donnell.
Was he the angry one? I like the angry one.
No, that was Kiefer Sutherland, wasn't it?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right. You know, there's been like 73 Musketeer films or something like that produced over the years.
Oh, there must have been.
And that's not even like counting tie-ins and like team-ups and stuff. That just straight up The Three Musketeers. There's been dozens of movies.
Yeah, so for all of you playing at home, the one we were referencing is the 1993 action-adventure comedy that stars Charlie Sheen, Kiefer Sutherland, Chris O'Donnell, Oliver Platt, Tim Curry, and Rebecca De Mornay. You know, just a whole bunch of French people.
You know, the best one. So let's jump in. We open with April reporting on a Mardi Gras parade taking place in New York City. I took a little glance around at a freeze frame to see if there are any good Easter eggs in the crowd of people all up in costume hanging out near the news report. I saw some jesters. I saw a couple of miscellaneous Native American kind of inspiration, vague leprechauns until 1 minute and 14 seconds. That's 14 seconds after the credits, mind you. Did you notice Super Splinter?
Oh, okay. That's not where I thought you were going with this. I'm going to have to go back.
There's a few. Okay, so I see one. There's like a dude in a onesie and a cape, and his head is large and brown, and it's either Splinter or just like a fucking horse.
Yeah, so there's a really funny thing about the costumes in this costume parade, and it sort of makes sense why everybody just assumes the turtles are costumes, which, you know, that's a thing that's been played before. Never mind that, like, these turtles are very well known to the city at this point. But besides that, everybody who is wearing a costume is like the best costume maker ever, because there are no like seams. They're like this Super Splinter character just like has a, it was drawn as if the head was an animal, not somebody wearing a mask. And then it gets so extreme to the point where like, oh, it starts off really simple. There's a person who has like a starfish head. Then there's the rat person. Then there's just like an actual giant skeleton.
Yeah, not like a guy wearing a black shirt with skeleton stuff painted on it. An animated skeleton that's completely transparent throughout and has actual eyeballs in the sockets.
It's so, like, I would be not worried about the four people dressed like mutant turtles. I would, first, would have been worried with the small child who is a bear cub, but then,
yeah, as I wanted to say, the living teddy bear is way scarier than the skeleton.
And then you pan over to, like, the 6 foot tall actual skeleton, because you could see through him, like... It's not like, oh, there's black spots to mark where the bones. No. You can see the buildings through this person. How is nobody bringing up this?
Is it like a marionette? No, I don't see any strings. Also, like the skeleton and the aforementioned little teddy bear demon thing are blinking.
Yeah. Yeah. They have full movement.
I really don't know what to take away from this. How did somebody fail so hard in the animation department immediately? April's in costume too. She's all decked out in a big formal gown, still yellow, of course. Yeah. The turtles are on site too, blending in with the crowd. Au naturel, as Michelangelo says. And again here, with the goddamn Channel 6 hierarchy, I'm never going to let this go, ever.
Man, they even like lampshaded in this episode. It's so weird.
Twice! Vernon is shooting April with a camera and burns up in the crowd. He's in a crow's nest thing calling the live show. Okay, so he is the network head slash owner slash program director slash executive producer and also now line producer. I take it back. I kind of appreciate that he's filling in slots in this woefully understaffed news channel that has an employee count of 4.
Like, what happened to the rest of the station? What happened to that, like, shock jock guy?
What happened to the sunglasses guy? What happened to Mr. Underbite? All layoffs due to a poor economy after the Reagan administration. We also get some A-plus chirps from the boys when Vernon insults them. Where did you get those ugly turtle costumes?
Probably the same place you got that ugly mask.
But I'm not wearing a... Not just a darn minute.
Oh! No stop! Sick burn, bro! Sick burn!
The fact that it even takes Vernon a couple of seconds to get that joke, too. Like, man, you dumb. You ugly and dumb.
So we basically have the opening story beats from Out of the Shadows here, though, if you really think about it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
April denotes that she is dressed in a 17th century noblewoman attire, like from the Three Musketeers, which she just had a copy of in hardcover form on her person.
Yeah, I think it's really funny that, like, she says, you know, just like the Musketeers, as if the 17th century didn't exist on its own.
I mean, I, too, carry around hardcover novels in the back of my pants, in the back pocket.
Of your costume ball gown.
Yes, naturally. She wanted to be ready in case anyone asked, and she is a mega literature nerd. April shifts over to reporting on a priceless diamond, which is red. Animation error at 2 minutes and 18 seconds when she gestures to the podium, allegedly holding said diamond. It is not there.
Also, to be fair to... what time is that?
About 2 minutes and 18 seconds.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now, when she's doing the actual broadcast, it is not there. Because when they first look over to it, it's in a completely different display. It has, a pillow and whatever.
The consistency in this episode is something.
Yeah. And to be fair to April here, the Sonic has Chaos Emeralds that are all different colors. And, you know, that doesn't really make sense.
I knew you were going to pull that argument. But naturally, Krang is watching the report, and I think we could avoid, 70% of the conflicts in this show if April would stop giving him ideas.
I mean, if she wasn't covering it, he'd be watching a different channel.
No, he wouldn't. He's their number one fan. he says that the diamond is actually impervium, which is a lost element from Dimension X. One, I don't know how you lose an element, but two, I really like Shredder's extremely earnest interest here.
What do you mean lost?
Avery's delivery is inconsistent in this, but in the best way.
Do you have time for a flashback?
Sure, why not?
What a great exchange. Hey, but we get to see other Utrons.
Other Krangs.
No, he's Krang.
Yeah, not according to the script.
Okay, fine.
They're called Krangs. I'm with you. The source material is Utrom, but we got to put our purist mindset aside.
Well, I guess we're in the same. We are technically in the same universe as the 2012, where they are called Krangs.
Well, that makes sense because in the Turtles Forever tie-in, they do come back around full circle and say that Krang was banished as not as a warlord, but as a failure.
I don't think that was 2012. I think that was the crossover episode in 2012.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm mixing up Turtles Forever and the crossover in 2012. My bad.
Yeah, no. I mean, actually, come to think of it, I think I said that in a really weird way. So thank you for knowing what I said.
We've been friends for a long time. Like you said, we finally, in this flashback scene, Krang visualizes several other Krangs, right?
Yep.
He tells us that his kind were experimenting with interdimensional travel, which that tracks. The transmat from Mirage was an Utrom invention. And they want to travel, and then they just decide to wing-wang the only known sample of this random element that's apparently super precious to them, but they put it on a tray, shoot a laser at it, and poof, it disappears, and they have no way to track it.
Yep, it was long lost because they're idiots.
Very smart. So let's also talk about this Krang species, because it does get retconned later, as we've mentioned a few times, that we do meet the Krangoids later on in like season 6 or 7. And that is the institutional name for the Krang and his kind, and they have these bipedal lizard creature bodies with tails, and then it's just like somebody stamped a Krang face on it, so that makes sense with his whole like lost body thing. But apparently no one fucking relayed any of this continuity information to the writers because, you know, the whole first season about how Krang wants to obtain a replacement body for his lost body when he was banished to Earth in the first place. In the flashback, all the Krangs are wearing bubble walkers.
Yep, they have all the same walker.
I completely forgot that this encounter, like, even happened, that there was a different flashback where we see other Krangs. I also, points for the one that has a mustache.
I've been waiting to mention the guy with the mustache. I like to think, my headcanon of this series now is that Krang is so pissy all the time because he can't grow facial hair.
I like that a lot more. I swear to God, though, I forgot about this. I remember the Krangoid thing because that was, like, life-changing. But seeing other Krangs and then just ignoring the fact that were they all banished? Were they all failures? Is that just like not even capital punishment in Dimension X? It's like, oh, you were jaywalking? You lose your body.
Well, now I hope so.
Oh, God. Moving on. We find out that this Imperium Diamond is the hardest known substance in the galaxy. So good branding choice there, marketing department. So, naturally, the decision to make here is to send these award-winning dumbasses to go steal it with zero strategy. Bebop and Rocksteady go.
Yeah, and Shredder doesn't even go with them this time.
Every time, you know, this is the most precious thing. This is the most important. This is the most powerful. Let's keep sending the B team. Krang's long game here is to use the Impervium to power a force field. So, as per usual, the MacGuffin is a crystal, and the crystal doubles as a battery. If I had a nickel.
Well, I mean, it's like kind of a battery, but it's also the property that he can use from it, right? Like, it's impervium. It'll make a shield generator that is invincible. I like that he monologues out loud moments after, I guess, Shredder went to the bathroom or something. It's like, Shredder doesn't know that the Impervium will make me invincible. It's like, well, he probably does now. You just said it out loud.
This is video game logic, though. This is like, you got to get the power crystal to get the power shield.
Yeah. Also, like, it's called Impervium. I feel like this thing could mean one of two things. It either makes you impervious or does something nobody wants.
Well, we will find out. Back at the lair, the boys are watching a superhero movie that battles a kaiju blob and eating grape jelly pizza. And I hate to say this, but I think this one actually has some potential. Because, like, grape and cheese, that's basically like a charcuterie board, right? Like, it wouldn't taste okay. Like pizza, but I've seen weirder shit put on toast. So, like, a little mozzarella, a little grape. I'm tempted to try this on a flatbread.
I think what's funny is that this is the most, like, classic part of this episode.
It's the only one that actually feels like it's a Turtles episode.
Like, we're almost 4 minutes into the episode, and it's like, oh, yeah, this is where every other episode starts. What was this other shit we just watched?
Leonardo is reading the Three Musketeers book that he just apparently lifted from April and trying to, like, convey some of the story to his brothers, and then he gets chased away for being an intellectual.
Yeah, whole lot of even from Donnie.
Yeah, right? There's a whole lot of holes going on in this episode.
I want to call out one more Easter egg, which I just noticed, which is that the superhero in the movie that they're watching, the monster movie they're mm-hmm. watching, there was a person cosplaying that character in the parade at the beginning of the episode.
Was it the horse?
No, it's like a guy, a big, huge, muscly guy in a gray suit. Like a gray Superman suit.
because it's a black and white movie.
Yeah.
All right, that's actually a good catch. Interesting. The next part bothered me a lot, too, because Leonardo goes into the next room where Splinter is. There's no setup for this. There's no, what troubles you, my son? Leonardo just walks in and starts whining at Splinter while he's meditating, mind you. Rude. I'm just trying to expose them to great literature. Who starts a sentence with that?
Right, yeah. Nobody asked you to do that.
But Splinter eggs him on. Like, he pushes him. He's like, oh, you need to get through to your brothers, I guess, because I just
be patient with them.
I want to stir the pot because I'm familiar with this material and where this is going to go as a plot.
Well, that's classic Splinter in this show.
Sometimes he's full of sage wisdom. Sometimes he's a troll.
I don't know if it's here, but is it like, is there a line here where Leo's like, I just want I want people to respect us? Or does he say that later?
That comes a little later.
Okay. Because, man, that's current.
Yeah, I mean, the theme in this episode is one that gets revisited a lot in Turtles, especially in the kid-friendly Turtles, where it's, you know, it's like the story of acceptance. That's not as present in something like The Mirage, where they're just happy being assassins.
Right, yeah.
But other versions of the Turtles that are a little more humanized, they're always just like, I wish people didn't think we were monsters. We're trying to save them. So this isn't new, and it's a good idea on paper, but executed extraordinarily bad in this episode. Leonardo calls in a favor to April looking for some musketeer costumes because he is a LARPer, and she offers up her entire workplace prop department again. This is like the third time she's done it. I'm pretty sure that's against policy. Next up, Cliche Langenstein drags April into a jewelry store for plot convenience.
just to make sure that they're there when everything goes down.
So thankfully, Irma does drag April into the jewelry store because Bebop and Rocksteady show up to get the diamond / Imperium / Star of Brazil. Let's give this thing more surnames. Come on. I like that the shop owner does stand his ground, though, when Bebop and Rocksteady come in and try to take the jewel. He says it's not for sale. Respect. They threaten to steal it. He says you can't, as if there's some consequence or any realm of security actually put in place to protect this priceless jewel, and then Bebop just punches a hole into the single pane glass that it's behind.
There's not even an alarm.
No. No lasers.
There's
no
store alarm. Nothing. I want to also give props to the jewelry store owner because Bebop and Rocksteady walk in and he just treats them as customers.
I mean,
like, he's not scared. He just like walks right up to them. He's like, how can I help you? Like, all right. Yeah. Good for you, dude.
Progressive. So they grab the jewel. Bebop says, we got it. Leonardo says,
if you're talking about trouble, you're right.
And then he just runs right up to Bebop and starts playing tug of war with this precious crystal.
Sorry, my brain shut off and I was drooling there for a second because that line was so fucking stupid.
Hey, if your brain is drooling right now, wait 2 seconds for what Irma does next.
Okay. So a fight breaks out. Leonardo gets tripped up, causes him to toss the diamond out into a trash can on the street. April's costume gets stuck. Irma fucking dips on her friend, finds the jewel that we were all just fighting about for a solid minute in the trash can. Oh, what's this?
Yeah, one correction. Leo doesn't trip. He gets a massive pedestal thrown at his head.
Why? It said he gets tripped up.
He gets a concussion.
Dude, this fucking writing is...
Well, the
attention span.
The whole reason that what happens happens is because he gets hit on the head.
Right. Okay. Fair.
So that moment does feel important to say that.
I wasn't
going to
ignore it, but yeah. Okay. You got the specifics. I'm still trying to wrap around the fact that Irma must have like the worst nearsightedness ever documented on Earth.
Yeah. Or like sudden onset amnesia.
That's a whole nother conversation for this fucking show.
I mean, she walks out the door and is like, what is this jewel that looks exactly like the thing my job was covering?
The same thing you were literally just gawking at in the window.
Oh, it bothers me so much because she doesn't figure it out.
Nobody.
The whole episode, she's like, I can't believe anybody would throw this away. What are you talking about? You were there. You were at the fight. How did you miss this?
I'm starting to think that Irma was a Skrull. So, as we said, Leo has gotten bonked on the head. He wakes up, he thinks he's a musketeer, because the same rules for amnesia in this show, same rules for ooze.
The last thing that you touched.
The last thing that you thought about. He calls April the queen because she's dressed the part, and then he name drops all of his brothers, who are very much not dressed the part. But I actually thought this was kind of interesting, because before we got into recording, I'd kind of done a little compare and contrast, and it actually, like, hand to God, aligns with the alignment I had, so that he compares Donatello to Athos, Raphael to Porthos, Mike to Aramis, and then, of course, Leonardo calls himself D'Artagnan. And it's 100% the alignment I had when I was, like, brushing up on my, you know, French literature history and the Three Musketeers and how their actual personalities and characters play out in the stories.
Yeah, at least somebody did some homework for this episode.
Athos is kind of unmotivated and therefore something of a pacifist, but also very capable. So that makes sense for Donatello. Porthos just wants to be a soldier, really bad. Makes sense for Raph. Aramis likes dancing and fucking. Well, in all fairness, they all like dancing and fucking. They're French. So our head dude has come unglued, and it's time for a break. We'll be back right after this.
It was a dark night in the sewer when Shredder was finally cornered. His only escape? To mutate into a robe-ready mutant module. How are they going to catch him? Look! Leo is mutating into a fire engine! And Don is mutating into a stock car! Cowabunga Splinter is mutating into the party wagon! Better hit the road, Shredder, because the road-ready turtles are on your tail.
Now they mutate.
Back. So we're at the lair. Brothers are worried, as exemplified by frantic circular pacing.
they look like geese.
D'Artagnardo is jazzed up, and he's making everyone put on the silly costumes that Donnie says that April had sent over. Now let's deconstruct that sentence right there.
Okay.
Had sent over.
Yes.
By what? A messenger service? Into the sewer? A delivery boy?
Oh, that is an excellent point. I didn't even think of that.
It's semantics, but come on.
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess she probably brought it over herself, but...
That's not the language
That's
he
not
used.
What they say.
The turtles suit up because Splinter thinks they should humor Leo again, stirring the pot.
Yeah. This has got to be Splinter being like... Yeah, this will be funny. You gotta go with what his brain thinks.
My headcanon absolutely has every time the camera pans away, he's just like giggling off screen.
But then it bites him in the ass because Leo thinks he's a servant.
He turns him into a butler. Can we also give props for the screen wipe costume change transition? That's classic shit right there.
Yeah, that was good comedy.
And also... You mentioned it earlier, but Cam Clark is just living his best life here. I want to cite the quote at 8 minutes and 31 seconds.
The diamond! Of course!
He just goes into that, in and out of that accent so yep. hard.
It is probably the best part. It's my favorite part of the episode, at least. It's just like how over the top the accent is.
It's my second favorite part. And I'll make sure you know what my main favorite part is.
I'm kind of surprised that Mikey's not into this. This feels like a thing that he would like, you know, just like, oh, I got to wear a fun costume and we're going to.
Yeah, let Raph complain. Let Donatello complain. Mikey should be like, all right.
Yeah, like we're going to have a fun time playing a game with our brother who definitely had brain damage.
Let's go, musket bros. Down at the Technodrome, we have entered the physical abuse portion of the Shredder Krang ship. Krang is having a tantrum and throwing chairs and shit all around over at Shredder, who is hiding behind a console. Krang also says what we're all thinking.
I gave you a vital mission, and you sent those two ant-brain mutants to botch this up.
The rawest line in this show. But Krang's also got, like, real threat energy here, too, because he gets right in Shredder's face, and I am here for it.
I really enjoy that... they are more like they are directly at odds again. Like, the idea that both of these people would be able to work together at all is a miracle. And so having them, like, jab at each other and throw things, and Shredder being like, well, screw you, Krang, I'm going to take your idea and I'm going to do it myself. Like, yeah, of course he would do that. That makes a lot of sense.
It's not all rivalry. Sometimes it's snarky comebacks.
Yep. That's true. Although I do like Shredder being like, well, I can't do everything. Like, they have to be able to go out on their own sometimes.
He's got to be able to take days off. These are all employees of Krang. Shredder counter tantrums and takes the dummies away with Krang's force field generator unbeknownst to Krang himself. We got a weird animation cell at 9 minutes and 45 seconds that shows that the gem is already in the generator.
Yeah, that happens like a handful of times.
Again, consistency. Nobody's taking notes.
It's like, Whoever did this part of the art was like, well, I already drew the thing with the gem in it. I don't want to draw the whole thing again. We're just going to use this at different points.
The main guy's got brain damage. Kids are idiots. Moving on.
Like, how did Irma get this on a necklace already?
How the hell did she walk away from her post at work while they're live broadcasting the parade to go home and change? This really just feels like one of the most poorly constructed and organized episodes. It's just huge glaring animation inconsistencies.
I mean, bad writing. None of the Channel 6 stuff makes sense.
Nope. Lazy progression and like every MacGuffin on the menu. This is, I'm kind of already hating this episode.
So Burn gets Irma back to the parade by saying that he needs her to cover the cameraman. Like, she needs to be filming at the parade. And she's like, I'm a secretary. What do you mean I have to use the camera? And he's like, I don't care. I need you there. Get there right now. But then we get to the parade. I know I'm like getting a little bit ahead of ourselves here, but this I want to be thematic. We get to the parade and Vernon is just standing next to Irma the whole time. And isn't he the cameraman? Like,
supposed to be.
Like, what is he doing? Why was Irma needed here?
We've seen Irma wear like a headset before. It's confused us in the past. Is she a producer? Is she some sort of PA or something? But she says she's the secretary, which she doesn't do a very good job at that in the first place. Why would you hand her an expensive piece of equipment that takes years of training to operate?
And I mean, like, serves them right, you know, because like Vernon, again, this is literally Vernon's job. He should be doing it. And instead, he's just standing there being like, Irma, you're holding it the wrong way. Irma, you have it backwards. Irma, this, like, dude, do your job and leave her alone.
Oh, it's absolutely rapid fire in this scene. Like you mentioned, Vernon isn't doing his job. Irma's doing his job very poorly on repeat occurrences. We also have Shredder wandering through the crowd completely unbothered. No one even blinks at the knife man, nor recognize the guy who has tried to terraform the Earth twice while constantly threatening it on live television to the entire tri-state area. Everyone's just into the parade. Shredder and Irma end up standing next to each other. I wonder where the crystal is.
Oh, yeah, it's just a series of, like, complete nonsense. They cut out, like, even before this part of the parade happens, the turtles go back to the jewelry store. It's obviously not there. Bebop and Rocksteady are in the back looking for the crystal in a dumpster and a sewer grate. Why would it be there, of all places? And then they get into like a cool fight where Leo just swings on a cable that he cut down, I guess.
In all fairness, the crystal does keep landing in unusual trash-related places.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. Basically, the entire series, jewels or crystals fall in garbage cans.
Yeah, and then Leo tries to face off with them solo. It doesn't go great, but brothers show up for backup.
And it goes worse.
Unguard, they scream unenthusiastically as they charge towards Bebop and Rocksteady. Let's add lazy animation to the list on this one too, Dan.
Yeah.
Because they're just four carbon copies.
Okay. This whole fight is so funny. Because Again, Leo pulls out his sword. He does the whole on guard thing first, except with enthusiasm. Bebop and Rocksteady rip a ladder and a pipe off of buildings, get themselves tangled in it. Leo just swings back and disappears.
Yes.
Then Raph, Donnie, and Mike run into Rocksteady, who has the ladder. They're completely untangled now. We saw nothing. They run into the ladder and then turn around and walk away.
Yeah, big NPC encountering a bush in a video game energy here, guys. Could you fucking duck?
Like, they don't even show Bebop and Rocksteady again or what happened. He just throws the ladder. They disappear. The turtles run face first into the ladder, and they're like,
well,
all right, let's go.
Come on, guys. Like, this is... 4-year-old me is insulted. I've had more cerebral stimulation from a Barney episode. So Krang finally realizes that the generator's gone. I promise you that Shredder will not be fired by the end of this episode. Now Irma starts flirting with the Shredder. He has literally held you hostage. And she thinks he's in a costume.
It is a costume parade. Also, is that Zach behind her or just another guy dressed as a turtle?
Right, turtle fan number one. Zach doesn't have red hair, though.
Yeah, he's got blonde hair. I think I saw that same kid earlier in the beginning of the episode, or at least another person dressed with the same turtle costume.
It's a turtle enthusiast costume.
Yeah, well, because it has a shell on the front. Come on, you idiot.
His heart's in the right place. So yeah, Irma's flirting with the Shredder. Instead of grabbing the jewel that he notices on the necklace around her neck, he picks her up like the Princess Bride.
He just picks her up entirely.
My notes just say she's into it.
Well, of course she is.
Yoo-hoo.
Irma, what are you doing in the sewers?
Well,
I'm thirsty.
Okay, so former TV news guy here still having a fucking fit. Burn is still on site too. The camera pans up. We see he's up in a crow's nest with Vernon and Irma still on the ground. Without them having to break the broadcast, right? Because this parade is ongoing. Who the fuck let April and Irma go shopping?
And they just took a break.
This isn't how live coverage works, guys.
Also, like, aren't they still filming, like, basically in front of the jewelry store and Irma's just hanging around with the stolen merchandise?
Yeah, the proximity has been, like, a grand total of, like, 15 square feet.
There is one more thing I have to call out from before, and that's when we get the shot of the turtles driving in the turtle van. So I guess the parade moves somewhere else because they were at the jewelry store. Why did they have to jump in the van? Mm-hmm. Leo freaks out at Irma's face on the monitor because, of course, now that he's a 17th century French noble, he no longer knows what a television is. And then there's a shot of the exterior of the van, and I'm pretty sure the front just says turt.
Oh, wow. Where's the time code on that?
Yeah, so it's 12:27, at least on the video that I'm watching.
They just give up?
It just says turt. You see the whole thing. It's not cut off at all. It just says T-U-R-T, full stop.
What the? Oh, come on. I'm getting increasingly angry at this episode. Like, I watched it and came into this recording pissed, and now you're making it worse.
Like, I'm sorry. We always try and find, like, the positive from everything we watch. We really do want to be optimistic.
The fields are fucking barren on this episode, kids.
If anything, like, I hope you're enjoying how bad this episode is with us, because I can't stop laughing.
I mean, we gotta have fun somehow, but this time it's coming from all the worst places. I did laugh out loud, though, at Shredder having a difficult time getting out of a crowd. He's a real one. I actually like that a lot. How do I get out of here?
Now, how do I get out of here?
Turtles arrive. Irma doesn't recognize Leonardo either. Jesus fucking Christ, will someone get Molitor a friggin' previously on segment? Leonardo chases Shredder with Irma up to the top of a parade float and is left hanging for life on a cable after Shredder takes a swing at him. But not before we all have a chance to call Irma ugly again.
Yeah, wasn't that weird that, like, everyone starts to gang up on her?
It just got to find excuses to be mean. I mean, something we don't encounter a lot in modern TV storytelling. I think we've all learned to be a little bit nicer. You could still have bullies, but like, yeah, don't make the good guys bullies.
Yeah, it's very weird. Like, just to take time out of whatever is happening so that Donnie and Raph could be like, ooh.
Right? It's not even a good joke. It's just going, ew. So as mentioned, Leo is in a life or death situation, hanging off a rope from a parade float, because we know that those are all known to be very tall and dangerous. Mr. Knife Hands decides that punching the air is more effective than cutting the cable his enemy is dangling from, which causes him to lose the high ground.
You underestimate my power!
There are some great, like, we called out the bad lines in this scene, but there are some really fun lines too. Like Shredder just shouting at the top of his lungs, "Stop calling me Richelieu!"
Oh, I do like that though. I like that there was a little more homework done, and that Leonardo refers to the villains as their like bad guys, 17th century equivalents.
Yeah, like he's the main villain of the Three Musketeers novel in all iterations. It's the evil priest.
Yeah, so he calls Rocksteady and Bebop Rochefort and De Winter, which are all from D'Artagnan lore.
Yeah.
So at least they did that much research, though at this point he's just kind of like throwing darts at a name board.
Another great, like, back-to-back lines from Irma, where she's standing on top of this platform with Shredder and Leo fighting, and she's convinced that they're fighting over her, and says, "What is this strange effect I have on men, and how do I keep it going?"
I mean, her lines are dumb, but the delivery is golden.
Yeah, it's really good delivery. And then April's like, "Hey, well, okay, did we mention that April just, like, grabs a helicopter and flies on top to try and save
her?" Oh, yeah, yeah. Didn't you know pilot school is part of her Channel 6 onboarding thing?
Like, she also does the traffic and weather up there.
But when she steals a helicopter to go save Irma's like, "No, I want to stay with the sausages."
Right. Saved. Who wants to be saved?
Bebop and Rocksteady aren't amused. Everyone is tough until a delusional teenager runs at them with a steel blade. Shredder escapes with Bebop, Rocksteady, April, and Irma in the chopper, takes in the Channel 6, charges a force field generator, and grants April the exclusive story. That's the nicest thing he's ever done.
Yeah, and I love these, like, kernels of intelligence that Shredder has sometimes. She's like, "Oh, hey, there's already a getaway vehicle. Let's just climb up there."
Yoink! Back at the lair, everyone is fretting, but no one as hard as Dart Nardo. Who is starting to snap out of his funk and return to Leonardo, but only in small doses. He's fighting it. Makes me wonder if he's faking it. He's giving off energy like the anime kid in high school who would, like, Naruto run down the hall. He was just way too committed to the character he thought was cool. We all knew that guy. Come on.
Yeah, there's a that's a trope in Japan, actually. There's quite a few anime that are based off of the kid who thinks he's a ninja or something like that.
Anime about a kid who thinks he's an anime. Radical.
So yeah. It's Chunibyo is the trope.
Oh,
there's a whole bunch of shows that have that in their title. Like, there's one that's Love Chunibyo and Other Delusions, and the idea is that if you're a Chunibyo, the time in middle school where you think you're the hero of a story.
Call me crazy, but that might be a right plot line for the Mutant Mayhem spinoff show.
Oh my god,
it'd work really well in that context.
Leo is totally going to have a Chunibyo moment.
Awesome. So I want to give more props to Shredder at this point for making sure that everyone is well rehearsed at Channel 6.
First time ever.
April introduces him as Emperor Shredder, and I just like, he's and then I'll say. he's so better prepared than anyone else at Channel 6 on the regular.
I enjoy that this whole scene is on the shot of the camera.
Yeah, I enjoy that he's saying that they're rehearsing, but the camera is on. Then Krang drills up through the basement, and Burn is going to be pissed.
Oh, yeah.
He's got a couple of foot soldiers with him. They apprehend Shredder a little too easy.
Yeah, dude, what the hell? You're a ninja warlord. Fight!
It's time to cower, Dan. He's got two speeds. Angry and vengeful and shit in his pants.
Yeah, he already spent that.
Krang doesn't even show up in the android body, though. He comes up in his little bubble walker again. So, were you not going to try to intimidate your employee? It'd be better than, you know, standing at kneecap height.
I'm glad that you pointed this out, too, because it is very weird and seems like a huge oversight. Because he... Two things. One, the last episode, he just came to the surface in the body already.
Yeah, he's been in the body for like 2 years.
No, but not even that, like, oh, he's been in the body, but like they disassemble it and reassemble it in this episode.
Yeah, that's a new feature.
Like they couldn't fit it in the drill module with him in it, so they had to break it down like it was a Broadway set touring around the nation or something.
They could establish that a little bit.
But like in the last episode, he rode a drill module up in it.
Yeah.
So what the hell?
But clearly everyone writing this episode didn't watch last episode or any of the other episodes.
And you want this gem so that you can be impervious to damage, and you don't want that in the body that has weapons built in and can grow to be the size of a skyscraper?
Oh, he does. We just have to build in plot convenience and suspense. Shredder is a shrinking violet at this point. He comes up with the excuse of saving Krang from having to lug the generator around. And then I love that Krang gets another absolutely ice cold line right here. Maybe I'll save you the trouble of growing old.
Damn!
Actual
chills.
He'll
do it too. He'll throw you in the incinerator.
So Krang power grabs, fires up the force field, shouts at Earth for a while, and then makes Bebop and Rocksteady demo the shield by trying to kick the shit out of him. Then the Foot Clan assemble his android body right behind him.
Those arms are so short. They're shorter than they were earlier in the episode, and they're shorter than they were in past episodes.
Yeah, they keep getting shorter until he's just going to have T-Rex arms.
It looks like a drumstick.
Well, I mean, like a chicken drumstick. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you meant like a drumstick. Like, well, they're not skinny. They're pretty fat. But, oh, okay. Dart Nardo swings in on a rope, snatches a crystal from Krang. Suddenly, Rocksteady's a fucking deadly marksman and is able to snipe the crystal right out of Leonardo's hand. He hasn't landed a shot in anything in 3 years. That's the first thing. Got it.
But he and Leo just hit his ass knocked out again.
Wait, because Shredder goes, "Thank you." So now Shredder's got the gizmo. The rest of the boys have arrived on site. Leonardo's got the sense knocked back into him, and it's time to show him what a turtle can do. Too late. Shredder flips the trigger and... Okay, so this shouldn't be a stretch at this point to infer that I have very much disliked this episode. Until 20 minutes and 20 seconds in, when Shredder activates said portal generator, not portal generator, said
shield generator
that was preset for the bubble walker size and shape of Krang, and then it traps him in a tiny force field dome. And I completely forgive the plot contrivance for the sake of the sight gag.
Help, get me out of here!
Okay, yeah, you're right. I forgot about that. This is easily the best part of the episode, especially the animation switch, because they cut out frames. You don't see his body shrink down. It just goes from he's standing to he's squished.
Yeah, it's so funny. It happened so fast. Everything about the execution on this joke is almost worth sitting through this episode for. I put my head down and was like crying into my keyboard, and Katie's like, "You okay?" Leo uses him as a fucking human shield.
You're gonna hate this, Shredder.
Hey, don't leave me! I like that he goes like Munchkin, too. Like, the voice is like Munchkin from The Wizard of Oz. Shredder eventually sets himself free, fucking tosses the generator and the priceless jewel aside, and then dips out, and then Donatello trips him with a staff, and then James Avery is absolutely on fire. Bad guys dip out of there, the jewel falls down a sink drain, and really, a fucking pipe foiled the plot device.
Yeah, I mean, I do want to call out, like, so they do the same cutout frame trick for when Shredder disables the generator, so he just goes from, like, crunched up to standing perfectly straight, and then just runs off until Donnie trips him and he screams forever as he falls into the drill module. But
Bro's gonna have a hernia.
It is really weird that, like, you can tell that they made a MacGuffin that was so powerful and they needed to get rid of it because otherwise, like, why wouldn't Krang and Shredder go after the thing that makes them invincible again? So, like, yeah, it just fell into a pipe and it's gone.
Shredder throws it away.
Hey, Brian.
Yeah.
Where do the pipes in Manhattan typically go to when they're depositing water?
I'm going to go ahead and guess the fucking sewer.
Yeah, you know, that place where our heroes live and half of the action of the entire series takes place.
At the credit roll, it just says, "The diamond will return." God. Okay, we're back at the lair. This is all for nothing, Leonardo says. Splinter says, "No.
All for one.
And one for all."
That's not even a joke.
Get me the fuck out of here. This episode is trash, Dan. I think this is the first time I'm straight up saying, like, I hated this episode. I don't ever want to watch it again.
You can tell that they, like, I think there's one other time where we were like, did they run out of animation budget and they just had to throw together some really corny ending that didn't really make any sense? And this is like, okay, if they did it then, they must have this time.
They didn't walk in. Then they came in broke. Then they lost all their money at the casino the night before, came in broke to make this episode, hungover, completely tripping balls on cocaine in the 80s. This makes no sense. It's bad notes. It's bad consistency. It's, like, bad pacing. It's bad animation. And it doesn't even feel like a Turtles episode. It just felt like somebody's friend was a huge Three Musketeers fucking nerd. And they're just like, okay, we got a freebie. We got to pad this giant season.
It is, like, normally there's some kind of, not lesson, but, like, theme that they play off. And, like, I guess it played off the theme, but, like, there wasn't anything here in this last scene. They're just all sitting around the TV and Splinter uses the line from the Three Musketeers. It's not a joke. It's not a play on words. It's not a pun. It's nothing. It's literally nothing.
I am not even going to bother trying to pull a lesson or a moral out of this episode because they sure as hell didn't. If anything, it's if your friend gets injured and goes insane, let him.
Yeah, really weird. That's what, like, even in the, as they're going back to the hideout, as they're going back to Channel 6, Splinter's like, remember, don't tell him the truth. He has to figure it out on his own.
It's stirring the pot. You just stirring the pot.
Some wisdom.
I'm giving this one a bossa nova, and that is generous.
Yeah. I mean, there is so much about this episode that is off from even what we have thought are not great episodes in the past. We know they're not all gold. You know, we're not here, like, lying to ourselves or you, dear audience. But this one has so many animation errors, so many things where they're not even errors. They're just lazy.
Yeah. And it disconnects yourself from the ongoing story of the series, which up until now has done a surprisingly good amount of effort with continuity and more than I expected. This is the episode in my head that made me think, like, oh, man, I don't have great memories of watching this show. This is the prime example.
Yeah, it's pure shenanigans. The whole episode is pure shenanigans. If there is a lesson to be learned, it's them bringing up the idea that the Turtles want to have some kind of respect or sense of belonging in the city, which they've touched on before for sure. This is not the first time that theme has come up, but that would be the thing that they drag out of this episode. And there's even this weird line where, like, because the crowd thought they were watching, like, a Three Musketeer show, that the Turtles get applauded by the audience when Shredder escapes, and Mikey even says, like, man, we wanted them to respect us, but they just think it's a play or something, which is sad.
Yeah, and why have Mikey deliver that line?
Yeah, like, it's such a weird, like, it's a weird characterization. It's a weird, like, I don't know. It is a sad notion in what is otherwise a completely ridiculous episode.
Look, the highlights are Munchkin Shredder. Yep. And Cam Clark going way up to 11. But everything else is just, like, it just felt cheap. It felt really cheap. It felt like somebody had no connection or no interest at all in the previous or any element of the source material, and they just wanted to get a hard-on over French literature.
That's a rough analysis, but a fair one.
All right, before we let everyone go, we're going to leave you with your weekly pizza affirmation. And after this episode, I'm pulling straight from Alexandre Dumas and the source material. Be kind. Aim for my heart. Coming up next week, hopefully something better.
What? A dump? We're doing a story about a garbage dump?
Not any garbage dump, Vernon. I'm talking about the garbage dump of the future.
Oh, I still think the whole idea stinks.
Like, comment, subscribe, tell your friends, family, and any delusional 17th century modernist cosplayers about Deuteronomy, a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles retread. Cowabunga!
Cowabunga!
Deuteronomy is produced by Brian Van Gelder and me, Dan Spitaleri. Brian edits and mixes the show and also designed our show art. Our theme music is composed by Mario Cello Nunez. You can hear more of his music on Spotify, which we've linked to in the show notes. Find us on Twitter at Deuteronomy_TMNT and send email to Deuteronomy.TMNT@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Cowabunga!
Looks like our head dude just came unglued.